You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early, so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hey, kids, do you like professional wrestling?
We like professional wrestling, don't we, Chris?
WrestleMania is here, baby.
The road to WrestleMania, the road to sign pointing has begun. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. He's the DJ. I'm the rapper. a little bit of behind the scenes stuff. I've gotten some tweets, Chris, asking. With the Bengals win, which I will tell you about being there live for in a moment, that this is a Voices of Wrestling Super Bowl coming up, because one Joe Lanza is a big fan of the Rams franchise, and myself, as you can see, as I am decked out in Bengals colors, I'm a fan of the Cincinnati Bengals, and I'm here to tell you people, I am not going to trash talk at all about this game. I am more scared than anything else. I don't want to get blown out in a Super Bowl. I don't, I don't want to be embarrassed. Any cocky Bengals fan you find is one that's come on the last 3 years, because people who have been historical fans of this franchise know that the bottom can drop out at any time, and it's back to decades of futility. So no. Maybe if he invites me on to the Football Intelligentsia, I'll talk a little X's and O's, but no, I will not be engaging in a trash talk war with Joe Lanza, cross brand for promotional consideration. I'm sorry, Chris, if you're upset that hurts the ratings.
No, I'm not upset about it. Like, look, here's the thing about the Rams. They're a trash team. Rams fans are garbage people of a lower caliber. Ethics, not really a thing for Rams fans, historically speaking.
Don't do this to me.
No. I had a friend who was a Rams fan, and I found out, and I scorned them from my life. And I told them, sir, you are omitted. I omit you from my life.
You. No, it was a fascinating thing. Because I yearn for hot crowds in wrestling, and let me tell you something, that Arrowhead Stadium is the truth.
Man, you know what's not a hot crowd? Rams fans.
It's actually kind of true.
just an ugly people.
A lot of showbiz types and a lot of selling your tickets to the opposite team, but went there, it was loud. Don't know if you followed the story of the game at all, Chris, but if you didn't, I'll let you know what happened. The Chiefs got up to a 21-3 lead before the first half, or before the end of the second quarter was done. It eventually was 21-10 at halftime, but there was a lot of despondency on my part, but there was also my brother, who is a Chiefs fan, a Chiefs season ticket fan, and granted me this ticket as long as I traveled out there. There was dancing and high fiving and a lot of trash talking going on in your boy. Your boy was maintaining a stoicism that's only seen on the comedy stage sometime when he's up there with a jackass doing the kind of the same thing. I had an older man who passed by me at least three times taking his son to the bathroom. Every time he passed, sorry about your loss. Sorry about your loss. And I'm just taking this and taking this and taking this. And then sometime in the third quarter, the Bengals clawed back and tied the game at 21 all. In the fourth quarter, they kicked a field goal to go up 24-21. The Chiefs then tied it at the end of the regulation, not getting into the end zone. And the Bengals in overtime, after intercepting their star quarterback, won the game 27-24 to get to the Super Bowl. And at that moment, I was overcome with emotion, which some of you will never see again from me. A loud primal scream came from me as I was watching. Could not find that older gentleman who kept on behind me all game about sorry about your loss. It was an awesome live sporting experience, given that I won. If I had lost, I'd be heartbroken. But at the same time, it was just one of those things where I don't even think this could have been scripted by pro wrestling. And that's why real sports is oftentimes better at telling stories than actual storytelling. But thank you all for your thoughts and comments on the Twitter sphere. It was a fun time. And no, I don't think I'm going to the Super Bowl because the cheapest ticket in is $5,000. And I don't think I want to spend that scratch, but I got a stock portfolio. I might sell some things, but if I do, I'll tell you that story later. But yeah, that was my trip to Kansas City. Chris, thank you for indulging in my self-indulgence.
No, I'm happy to. You sound like a good fan of football, unlike Rams fans who are bad people.
Degenerate
humans,
gamblers.
They are fatherless sons, daughterless mothers. Yeah, like just aimless.
Whoremongers. I mean, you're
baseless. Yeah, yeah. Just a debased people.
They kick babies. I mean, they're just the worst.
Yeah, they lick phone poles. Yeah.
But all these opinions are those of Chris Novembrino. Do not at me on Twitter.
No, feel free to at me. I don't give a shit. Yeah, please, by all means. You all love me. I can't wait to hear about it.
Getting into the wrestling news, World Wrestling Entertainment had by far its most successful year financially in 2021, taking over $1,095,174,000 in revenue and having $179,843,000 in profits. It was the first time the company tapped the $1 billion mark in revenue, with 85.5% of the revenue coming from media, which would be television and streaming deals, including the WWE Network internationally and Peacock domestically, what is left of pay-per-view and advertising and sponsorships. The switch to Peacock led to the WWE Network streaming and around the world. And, that revenue increased from $185,667,000
in 2020 to
$215,404,000 in 2021. Look, this is a podcast usually dedicated to critiques of the storytelling, the product itself, not the business metrics itself. And any podcast that you listen to that tells you, oh man, this poor creative, WWE might be in trouble with it, turn them off. Unsubscribe from them. McDonald's makes crappy burgers, but they are a huge hit worldwide. This, I'm somewhat baffled, but you know what? We criticize.
I think this
the
is
moves.
A little, it's not quite the McDonald's analogy. I'm with you. Like, look, we do criticize the writing a lot, because this is a show that's focused on what is good and what's bad. What is successful and what is not successful is more nebulous.
It's more WrestleNomics.
Yeah, it's more WrestleNomics. And specifically what is profitable and what is not profitable. Insofar as we ever talk about where creative intersects with the business, and this still remains a big problem despite profitability, is in television ratings. Mm-hmm. WWE's television ratings do continue to decline. And I think a thing that has baffled many of us in the podcasting sphere as well is the seeming disconnect between the profitability of World Wrestling Entertainment as a company and its seeming decline in popularity by every measure I can think of. Wrestling is not just uncool. It's about as uncool as any point in my lifetime. It's like 1992, 1993.
I think you nailed it right there. 92, 93, when WCW was trying to be WWF light and trying to make things into cartoon characters and turn Ric Flair into Spartacus and all these other things. No, I think you're dead on here.
So give podcasters not
maybe 1991.
But like give all of the commentary a little bit of credit in the sense that we're like, there's still this weird processing of like the company's profitable and yet fewer people are buying the product, it seems. And so it's the question continues to be, where's the money coming from? And obviously the glaring issue is all the times that WWE pleads poverty when they make these talent cuts.
Yeah. Hey, budget cuts, kid. Gotta tighten the wallet. Yeah, and on the flip side, I'll work in some of the creative thing. Fightful Select, our friend Sean Ross Sapp, also Bengals fan. One longtime talent said that nothing matters outside of four people, quote unquote, maybe, as the vibe that they get. Over a half dozen main roster talent pointed to issues with continuity and nobody else being designed to do anything. Several talent have felt like they're without a voice and are reduced to making pleas on social media. Another talent said in the time they've been there, they've never felt, quote unquote, less heard. And their attempts to speak with Vince McMahon go ignored, met with haste, or sometimes seemingly spitefully go the other way based on their recommendations. We've also heard of several contradictory decisions over the course of a number of months that have reversed course to something the talent had already pitched and had denied prior. One wrestler stated, quote, if you see a complaint with merit and in good faith about something that lacks sense, logic, or continuity, I almost guarantee we have complained too. It just never changes anything. Now, the part that I took from this, one longtime talent. That means that they have re-upped at some point for the next 3 years or the next 3-year deal over and over and over again, and they were expecting something different. Now, my cynicism is always in full overdrive, Chris. You know what I say. I say they sweet talk you into signing the contract and then they tell you to F off. I don't have a lot of sympathy here, quite frankly, because they don't have to do anything. They are making money hand over fist. Who are you to tell them how to run their business? If you want changes in there, do something about it. Otherwise...
Yeah, at this point, I'm of the opinion that if you want to have a creative component in your contract, you need to negotiate that item in. And you're a damn fool for thinking that WWE will give you anything. Like, if you want a guaranteed 6-month program, one of the terms you need to negotiate is a guaranteed 6-month program.
Yes,
that you get authorized. It has a clear start date and a clear end date. If you want long form booking, you need to negotiate it into your contract at this point, because there's just nothing to suggest that WWE cares about doing that, even for its top talent. And as a general rule, they don't care about doing that right now. Otis. Yeah. Oh, like try to, you know, give me a 2-paragraph explanation as to the dynamic between Chad Gable and Otis in the Alpha Academy. There's nothing. One week they wear one stupid outfit. The next week they wear another stupid outfit. Occasionally one of them gets a haircut. Like there's not actually a plot there. If you want a plot, you're going to have to ask for it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I read these reports and I get it. And don't get me wrong. I was critical of the people. It sounded like I was being critical, but I do empathize and sympathize with them. The problem here is I also think they want it both ways. I think that they want that creative freedom, but they also want the money from the escalation clauses that you get for having time in WWE and things like that. And there's a trade-off here. There is a definite trade-off. You can have the economic security, but you're going to have to do what you're told. Or you can go out there and hustle and do what you want and find a startup or even an AEW if they'll take you and see if they'll give you creative freedom. But you can't have it both ways. And that's a risk. And I get, as you get older, it's a risk a lot of people don't want to take. And I'm fine with that too. I'm fine with your decision so long as you can live with your decision. I think that's my problem here.
Yeah, I think that that's true. And I mean, it will, I think, forever gnaw at me that for as profitable and as successful on many metrics WWE is, that I will forever believe that whatever profit they did in this last quarter, $1 billion plus, they could have put on a good television show and done at least as much profit, if not better profit. Like, you could make these guys more profitable. And I think, like, this gets back to something you and I were talking about before the show with Goldberg, how Goldberg's entire profitability is due to one really good and strong push for this guy. And WWE still hinges upon it. And we can sit here and, I mean, we're not going to, but we could do, you know, 10 minutes on the last 10 years of WWE not making stars and thus not having these profitable assets to bring to their own television. I think for as much profit as this company has brought themselves with this model, I think the talent sees, rightly so, that they could be more profitable if they were doing, I don't know, better things with a guy like Ali. Like, literally anything. That guy's marketable. He could be far more profitable than he currently is in terms of what he does for the company. And I think there's a lot of guys like that. Matt Riddle, I don't really care for him, but the fans seem to really, like, be into the guy. Probably could be doing better than what he's doing right now. Braun Strowman, my God. Well, you know, there's a guy who no, I mean, there's a guy that should have been built up, ready to do action movies, doing, you know, like, he's the heavy in this summer's action movie every single year. Like, this is just a company that's not building up stars. And I think in terms of where does that intersect with the business, I think it does hurt their profitability, but it's in a much more subtle way. So it's not just like, wow, Raw is a very stupid 3 hours. Can't believe this company's making money. I think that's a reductive way of looking at it. But like, when you're not using those 3 hours of Raw to make the stars of tomorrow, you are hurting the profitability of the company, in addition to just not making a very entertaining to watch television show.
Action movies and comic book IP are the hottest thing in the space. And they have a whole roster full of people that they could put to use in that, as John Cena has shown. And he is excellent in Peacemaker. If you guys aren't watching that, I highly suggest you do.
I know, like, shouldn't the Usos have already done one or two cameo appearances in a superhero movie as, like, some, like, twin, like, superhero.
G.I. Joe, like, Tomax and Zaymot. That's what I want.
I know.
No, I get your point.
Number.
Yes.
Yeah.
Action movies, everything. I mean, these guys, I mean, WWE could be making a third stream of revenue, but no, we know how to make movies too. Here's Sino Evil 12 with Kane. Just like, oh God, what? No. Speaking of one Braun Strowman, the other side of his WrestleMania program from last year, one Shane McMahon was brought back as a secret entrant in the Royal Rumble and also to produce the match. He has since been told his services are no longer necessary with the WWE. The plan was originally that he'd help produce a match, but then go into the Elimination Chamber and then finally wrestle Seth Rollins at WrestleMania. I thought, editorial note here, thought it was going to be Austin Theory for sure. That story seemed to be getting set up real well, but no, it was Seth Rollins was the plan. But it turns out that there were complaints about how he wanted to build the match around himself and issues involving co-producer James Gibson, a.k.a. Jamie Noble. Reading from Dave Meltzer's Wrestling Observer here, quote, others noted that he wanted to build the ending of the match around himself and be a featured player in the match, was visibly very unhappy when his match ideas were shot down by his father, and was not professional with Gibson and talked down to people. There were also disagreements regarding he and Lesnar regarding the closing stages of the match. Jeff's laughing because he's trying to imagine that. And Lesnar pretty much does.
You know, Shane wanted to get his shit in a little bit.
Yes. And Lesnar.
Yeah, I know. It's exactly.
And Lesnar pretty much does exactly what he wants. But this led to people being told one thing and then another between Shane's ideas, what Lesnar wanted and what Vince wanted. Shane wanted Rollins in there, but that was struck down because of the beating earlier. It was constantly changing all day, and Vince was overruling Shane on his ideas and also agreeing with Lesnar. About the only thing left in regarding him looking good was a spot where he would outstrike babyface and former UFC fighter Riddle. He botched the elimination as well, not going over the top rope and clothesline, so they had to redo that over again. look, to me, it sounds like a bad idea to bring him in to produce something that you're already in, because of course you want to be part of the star of that. And especially if they've told you you're going to be in the Elimination Chamber and a part of WrestleMania.
To like Shane not knowing where his role is in the ecosystem. Like Shane still thinks he's a star. That's the thing in this story that is kind of baffling to me. I thought that Shane had sort of more or less accepted, like, you know, this is where I'm at in this stage of my life, and that's fine. And, you know,
I did too.
Yeah. And so, like this, the thing that is baffling to me about this story is, like, this guy still thinks he's like 32.
I'm going to defend him a little bit here. Because look, don't get me wrong. There are two ways you can take being difficult and talking down. And it always depends on who's being told what. Vince brought him in and said, you produce this match. Or you help produce this match. But also, part of the plan is we're putting you in Saudi Arabia in the Elimination Chamber, and we're going to set you up for a match with Seth Rollins. So if you tell me that, don't get me wrong, I'm not going to book myself to eliminate Brock Lesnar, but I'm definitely going to try and figure out a story to make that make sense so that I have something to do within the Rumble and to set it up nicely. This could be somewhere in between. Don't get me wrong. I can totally see the Shane being petulant backstage because his ideas weren't being met and him wanting to be a megalomaniac. And, oh, hey, I want to outpunch the UFC superstar, which seems like just a bad idea on paper. And trust me, Shane is historical for having bad ideas and creative. It's legendary amongst ex-writers and ex-producers that Shane had some crappy ideas. But at the same time, he should have never been brought in to produce a match when he's not producing on the weekly, quite frankly. And to me, I understand wanting him for Saudi Arabia because he's still, quote unquote, a star from the Attitude Era. But if you're going to have him put a path in there to get to WrestleMania somehow, you have to give him some shine in the match. I get that. But these were just bad ideas all the way around. Quite frankly, and the Rumble wasn't anything to write home about as a match either. So
no, the Rumble was boring. I think WWE has been circling around the toilet bowl with some of these programs for a very long time now. Like the Lesnar and Reigns programs, very long in the tooth with no real intrigue. And this is this is where not being good at long term storytelling really bites
yes.
them in the ass.
Yes, it would be nice if you could script out something for a year and stick to it for the most part, injuries notwithstanding, but they're not going to do that anymore. And guess what? Don't have to point at the scoreboard. Look how much revenue we made. We made over $1 billion last year. You tell me your idea, you stupid writer boy, you know,
yeah. I think that's what's going to keep them from actually seeing the basic problems. And even like what's WWE's stock price? It's at 51. It's not like it's good. If you've been holding it for 5 years, it's good. But if you've also if you've been holding it for 5 years, you should have sold a couple of years ago when it was at like $100 and it ain't going back there.
So we saw tonight Goldberg expected back for the Saudi show. Bayley and Asuka expected back over the next few months, as is Lacey Evans, who's been training for a return. One person who has left WWE, who was released, Brian Kendrick, released by WWE, scheduled to show up on AEW Dynamite on Wednesday, and then was pulled because the internet never forgets. Kendrick said some anti-Semitic things. Let's not beat around the bush there. Alex Pawlowski, our friend at Fightful, remembering the research he did from the bracketology thing for CWC, still being very disappointed. David Bixenspan helping to broadcast it out to a much wider audience. But yes, Holocaust denialism, things about the state of Israel and earthquakes, reptilians, ran the gamut of just absolutely horrid, horrid comments, and Tony Khan pulled him from television. Kendrick, not to condone, but just to mention, very contrite in an apology, admit he said some terrible, terrible things, some vile things, and left it at that. we'll see what happens from here. He hasn't been reformed yet in my eyes. I don't think he can be necessarily. I mean, he might be, but he worked for a number of years after saying this stuff in what, 2013. And I'm a little speechless, Chris. What do you have to say about this? You sound like you're drowning in water here, kid. Pausing.
So, a story like this makes me think like a number of complicated thoughts. One, I'm amazed that WWE, when doing a background check, never ran into any of this stuff. Or if they did run into this stuff, this is the other thing I was thinking about. Maybe that was part of the Eva Marie deal. If you train Eva Marie and you make her halfway passable, we can look past this. If you can make Eva Marie.
Oh no, this was after he was signed though. This was after.
Yeah. Okay.
Not the comments, but the Eva Marie thing was long after even the Cruiserweight Classic happened.
So the comments were before the Eva Marie thing, is what I'm saying.
Oh yeah, long before. Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying is that essentially I could see a path, perhaps, and this is all conjecture, where WWE basically was like, we'll quietly turn a blind eye to this if you can train up Eva Marie. But I still think it's baffling that like a background check didn't catch this. I will also say that I don't think it's healthy for us as people and as fans to be devoting inordinate amounts of time trying to deep dive all of these wrestlers' lives. I'm not condoning this, and I'm not, like I definitely want to make it clear that I think what Kendrick said is like pretty aberrant and horrible. And like I'm gonna condemn that further in just a moment here, but I'm just at a point in my life where I've got better things to do than to putz around on the internet and look for some horrible thing that somebody said 10 years ago. And I would strongly encourage everyone that you might actually have something more meaningful to do, like someone who loves you, a pet that needs walking, a friend you haven't called in a long time, someone you need to say you're sorry to. Anything could be better than spending your day trying to find dirt on a pundit or a professional wrestler so as to drag them down. I really feel fairly strongly about that one before we move into Kendrick.
And I agree with you, but let me ask you this, because somebody brought up this in my DMs and I think it's a relevant point. I just can't get on board with it. It's one of those things where they said, well, you remember, this was at a time where Kendrick admittedly had a lot of mental health issues and a lot of substance abuse issues and stuff like that. And I kind of go, okay, fine. There's also that part of me, and I talked to you about this online as well. I'm like, okay, is there a way where you bring this up to Kendrick and go, do you still believe this crap? And you get an honest answer. Like, is there a chance that somebody has truly repented and changed from all this, as opposed to being accused of it and then saying that, oh yeah, I've changed, just to give lip service? That's what I'm interested in, because look, I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. I've made actually major changes in my life to how I was 10 years ago.
Yeah, you're a lot meaner to me now.
No, you deserve it, but okay.
That's fine.
But you know what I'm saying here? It's one of those things where it's like, don't get me wrong, the Joey Ryan jailhouse conversion to Christianity bugged me a bit, but at the same time, as a person of faith, I can't really question that. It's like, it doesn't matter how you come to, I mean, you can question it, but at the same time,
feel free to outsource. I'm always here as a favor if you need to outsource that task.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, this timing is certainly, you know, prayer is the last refuge of a scoundrel. And to me, what helped Brian's case in some cases in a little bit of a case. He was just contrite with being wrong. He didn't make an excuse about it. He was just like, I did some terrible things, to the point where even Sabu goes, what you say, bro? And he goes, oh, online, which was a hilarious exchange. But I it's one of those things where it's like, if you bring this stuff up, how can you even be sure somebody's changed anymore? That's the weird thing to me.
Yeah. With regards to Kendrick, I'm not saying that Kendrick didn't have serious drug issues. That's pretty well documented. I think everyone who knows Kendrick's background knows that this is a guy who's got some issues. He said some things. I'm even willing to believe he doesn't believe those things, or that there's a path where potentially he didn't really believe them at the time, that they were the fuel of drugs. But
even playing it up for video.
But the thing is, in order for me to be able to really believe that, just be willing to believe that, in order for me to really believe that, I would need to have seen Kendrick basically at some point do a shoot interview where he was like, dude, like when I was on drugs, I was saying all sorts of crazy shit. I used to think that the aliens are like, and I'm not saying he doesn't need to be like going to the Holocaust Museum with the anti-defamation.
Yes.
I'm saying like, I literally just need Kendrick going like, bro, drugs will screw up your mind. I used to think that they were reptilians that, like, controlled the government. I used to think that they were aliens and shit. When I was on drugs, I was not in my right mind. Right. If Kendrick was saying that for me would not quite get me all the way there to on the anti-Semitism stuff, but would get me pretty far along to going like, dude, like, okay, the guy had a drug problem. He wasn't thinking straight, like, especially if you've ever known anyone who's like had a methamphetamine addiction or like one of those kind of more up intense drugs, messes with your brain. You're seeing stuff and thinking stuff that just isn't true. But we haven't seen any of that from Kendrick. And while I think the tweet that he put out was fine,
on the wrestling scale it was on the upper end,
I'll give it a 6.5 out of 10 on the wrestling scale, but like, then it's the timing, right? He's saying this because he got caught. This is the guy who feels really bad that he hurt his wife after he's been caught cheating on her.
I won't go that far because maybe he doesn't even remember this stuff. I mean, it was a shoot interview from, I think, 2011. So it's
okay,
like one of those
then,
things-
then this is a fantastic time for him to disown anti-Semitism.
Like
if he doesn't even remember it, like, I mean, especially given the climate, we've had an anti-Semitic church attack here in the last month or so. Like this is in the news. It is something that people are legitimately concerned about. And beyond all of that, like, this is not what Kendrick said. You have, like, Whoopi Goldberg's comment from, like, a week ago. Oh, and then you have Kendrick's comments that are, like, way, 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 way worse.
Yes.
He has a lot of work to do here in order for me to believe that he changed. And I'm with you. I don't know that there's actually a path where I'll believe fully that he doesn't believe that the Jew Illuminati is secretly controlling things. He would need to do a lot of work.
Continuing with the news, Dean Mutati, 35, best known as Mojo Rawley, noted that he nearly died from COVID in 2020. He said his issues got so bad that he is still not 100% nearly 2 years later, but has recovered enough to say that he will be returning to professional wrestling. I think that's good news. I always liked Mojo. I thought he was athletically gifted and very smart. I'd like to see what he does on the indies. Hopefully COVID has not permanently damaged him. That's my fear here. And it would probably be before we even knew what COVID was, or, you know, had any ability to get a vaccine. So
right.
It was 2020. So yeah. Also on the COVID list, Bobby Horn, who used to wrestle as Mo of Men on a Mission, is in intensive care due to COVID-19 complications. He had a kidney transplant. I think he's just immunocompromised from all that. I don't know his vaccination status or not, but say a little prayer for old Mo from Men on a Mission.
Mojo Rawley to me, it is a cautionary tale as to why it pays to be risk. And I'm not saying he wasn't. I want to be really clear on this. Like, it's why it pays to be risk averse when it comes to something like COVID-19. especially at the start of the pandemic, there were a lot of unknowns about this, one of which ended up being long COVID. That, you know, for the people who thought that this was just the flu, you get the flu for a couple few weeks and then you're over it on like the longer end. Maybe it goes upwards of a month on the longer end. Long COVID, as we're seeing, is really doing a number on like fully healthy people. Like Mojo Rawley, of all the people to think long COVID doing a number on, Mojo Rawley. It's actually kind of like that's what he's so high energy in a profession that's high energy. I still think about that NXT entrance.
Oh,
I was exhausted watching that guy go to the ring.
That's like Ultimate Warrior. Yeah.
It was like more than the Ultimate Warrior. Those first initial "I don't stay hype, I get" or "I don't get hype, I stay hype" like entrances, they're out of this world in terms of energy. It's crazy to think that this guy would have been at a point where he was low energy in any way. And it's just a real testimony to how this thing can really fell a strong person. Mojo Rawley is a strong dude.
In sad news, Mauro Ranallo, former NXT announcer and Strikeforce and boxing announcer for Showtime, has signed to host a reality show on CBS called Beyond the Edge. The show debuts on March 16th in the Wednesday time slot from 9 to 10 p.m. time slot. The show is about 9 celebrities who give up their luxury lifestyle to live in the dangerous jungles of Panama, probably with production assistance and catering, but nevertheless.
Is the sad news that these celebrities are not going to be actually left to their own devices
and
just film it?
And then Mauro Ranallo is having any part of this farce. I'm so ashamed. Anyways, ratings news. WWE SmackDown last Friday, 2,217,000 total viewers, 0.56 in the demo. Rampage, 601,000 total viewers, 0.25 in the demo. Raw, 1.87 million and 0.47. It had opened with 2.1 million, but only did 1.6 for the promise of Ronda Rousey coming out to announce her WrestleMania opponent. NXT, 619,000, only 170,000 in the demo. Dynamite, 954,000, 0.35 in the demo, the lowest total in 18 to 49 viewership since December 15th. What stands out to you? Anything? AEW being low was surprising to me, especially for MJF Punk.
Yes, and we'll get into MJF Punk here. I guess the other big one is Ronda Rousey not being a driver. Having negative ratings with Ronda Rousey, as in like ratings attrition, is a bad sign. Cause like we have seen when someone's actually legitimately a celebrity like CM Punk, that actually can move the needle. And with Ronda, it's really interesting how her star has fallen over the last like four
years. We've seen
years.
The stance. We've seen Ronda already. The newness is gone. I'm going to be honest. Once Ronda lost, and when she lost 3 in a row and then left the UFC, she wasn't as hot of a star as she could have been had she just left the UFC undefeated. And that was a problem. But yeah, I mean, it's bringing out the celebrity we've already seen kind of thing, as opposed to somebody new. I didn't think it was all that unexpected. And also, we'll get to it in the Lazy River. I just don't think she's a very good professional wrestler either on the acting or the technical side, but that's me. We'll get into that in a little bit. We will open up the Lazy River of wrestling criticism with ice cold Royal Rumble takes. We're going to have a little bit of a chill, a little bit of a polar bear party jumping into the ice water of the Royal Rumble, which happened last Saturday. Watched most of it on a plane. It was a lousy pay-per-view. I'm going to be honest. I did not enjoy I enjoyed certain aspects of it, but like I was really digging Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins. I loved the Shield entrance. I loved the story of the match. I thought it was a very well done match. I thought it was really, really good up until the Charles Robinson holding up the arm and placing it on the rope. And it just, the air on this pay-per-view all went out. The soul of this pay-per-view all went out on that aspect where they tried to sell that as Seth reaching a rope when he was lifting the arm for three, when it was really Charles Robinson putting his hand on the rope. The other thing I liked, I liked Becky and Doudrop, but it was in the death spot and it just, the crowd couldn't get it over. And to be honest, Becky's questionable heeldom didn't help. Or Jeff Goldblum's school of acting on the two count, because every time there's a two count, it's the grab the chin, grab the head, put both hands in the thing. I'm thinking of something. If I'm doing this for radio, but I'm also on video, so you'd have to watch that to see. But yes, there's some very Jeff Goldblum-esque antics going on with Becky every time there's a kick out. The Women's Rumble was terrible. It was dreadful. They don't have 30 women who can fill a rumble, and that's a problem. And plus, there were some things that just did not make sense in that damn thing. Sasha being eliminated by Zelina Vega. What? You know, they said, oh, we all know what Summer Rae is going to go after. No, because not all of us live on Twitter. So we all didn't know she was going after Natty because of the Total Divas feud.
Oh,
they did nothing with Mickie James. And she got unceremoniously dumped by Lita. You know, her entrance was fantastic. She got a huge pop in St. Louis. Did nothing with it. Most of the legends were legends and just old stories. It's the same people we've seen year after year. Sure, Ronda came out and won it. That was pretty big. They reignited the feud with Charlotte. Okay. Men's Rumble.
I mean, you know, like one last thing. Normally the 30 slot is something relevant. And in this case, the 30 slot was Shayna Baszler and it meant nothing.
I liked, they tried to tell the story of the alliance between Ronda and Shayna, but they really didn't get there for me. That's true. That's not true. A lot of times they make 29 the climax and then 30 is kind of anticlimax.
That's true. Uh-huh. But usually there's like one. There's usually one last really important person. It's like Ronda at 28 normally it'd be someone in that 29 or 30 slot or whatever. I don't know.
The Men's Rumble was kind of an afterthought because everybody knew as soon as Brock lost to Bobby that Brock was coming into that Rumble, I think. It was a bunch of guys that nobody believed could win the Rumble for the most part. I think that's the other thing is because they've now made this about main eventing WrestleMania, only main eventers can win this. And I don't think Dominic Mysterio, anybody's going to be thinking that he's going to be winning the Rumble if he pulls number 30, you know?
And I don't even think the main eventer issue is the biggest problem. So long as you actually have 4, 5, 6 guys going into the Rumble who you credibly view as a main eventer and who fans might earnestly want to see go on a road to WrestleMania push.
Yeah.
The big issue here is like no one cares enough about Shinsuke Nakamura. Right now to want to see him go on. And I like Shinsuke. I like Shinsuke.
Love Shinsuke.
Yeah. Like I like Shinsuke. No one cares about seeing him on a road to WrestleMania push. AJ Styles, indisputably a WrestleMania main eventer.
Yes.
No, not heated up anywhere near to the point where you'd actually want to see him go on that. Drew McIntyre. No.
Meh.
Kevin Owens. No. Although like it would be a guy I would love to see in a WrestleMania main event program.
Yes.
Not there right now. You know, and then Big E, I liked that guy. Whatever happened to him? Did they ever do anything with him?
You know what? As we transition out, cause I don't think we have any strong opinions after this on the rest of this Rumble pay-per-view, because everything was leading to the aftermath on
that
Rums.
Whole Rumble match is about Bad Bunny though, basically.
Yes.
Yeah. That, I mean, outside everything prior to Lesnar's scene was basically Bad Bunny is a great wrestler who can hang with the rest of our goofus roster.
Yeah. Bad Bunny's out on tour and stuff, but he can come to the Rumble and beat the hell out of all of our weekly guys. And they wonder why only 4 people maybe matter in the company after grumbling about that. It's because nobody stands up and goes, this is effing ridiculous. Why is he? Well, he's a celebrity. It'll get us hits on Extra or Entertainment Tonight. Yeah. But there's also a downside to that. It also makes you look dumb because you are a trained professional and you are getting beat by this guy who's in storyline, just a celebrity off the street. So yeah, I get wanting the celebrity rub, but at the same time, there's a cost to that. Big E, was he? I mean, can we agree he was kind of done dirty? I mean, he is after day one, the way he was unceremoniously pinned there and the way he was treated in this Rumble, I don't see a second belt coming for him. Gotta tell you, do not see a second singles push for him, do you?
I don't. It's stunning to me. I think you and I both see this guy as a star. They don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
It's never been more obvious because, like, everybody put their hopes in him. And, you know, we were critical of Big E's kind of attitude towards it, at least on screen, in terms of the, hey, being funny is what got me here and stuff. And we were just screaming, no, 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 type of things. I'm not saying it was a self-fulfilling principle of
I don't think it was a self-fulfilling prophecy because prophecy, in order for you. Some of the stuff that you and I want people to do, like, you know, grab the mic and just like go Bullworth on it. Like the fans are like not actually there for a Bullworth moment from Big E right now. Yeah, you know
that
what I mean?
That is an arcane reference, my friend.
Yeah, all right, okay. Pipe bomb. Thank you. Yeah, CM Punk. All right.
Not a lot of Warren Beatty fans.
Whatever. You guys need to go and watch some good movies, you nerds.
Warren Beatty's never made a good movie. Dick Tracy.
Yeah, there you go. Dick Tracy. Dick Tracy was not a good movie. Dick Tracy was a big movie. Yes. Totally different. It was
Bugsy
one of those
was all right. Bugsy was okay.
It was not that good of a movie.
Red
like,
stinks.
They just like really marketed the hell out of that.
Bullworth.
Point being, like we you and I want these Bullworth moments, Hawkins.
We want wrestling is what we want.
Like the fan, and part of the formula there is that the fans have to want that too. There is no sense of hijack for as shitty as Raw is right now. There is no hijack Raw movement going on. Fans don't care enough to force the issue.
No, they want
a guy like
so.
I don't.
They want to see the hits. They want to see the hits.
When we go back to Big E, then like, what do I tell this guy? Well, then you just do this, and the fans will. Well, no, they won't. They're not going to do anything. So he just has to go out there and read the stupid. I'm up being funny in hello, Cleveland. Yeah, yeah.
Scream the name of our city. Say, don't you dare be sour. Clap for your new day and feel the power. Skip down there, throw pancakes, kiss babies. And then
will boo you, but no one will love you.
Yeah, and then get off the stage because we're gonna start chanting RKO because we want to see somebody get hit with an RKO, and then we'll go home happy. And wrestling is awesome. Yeah, what they want, what we want, are two different things. But yeah, I will let you start the lazy river, sir.
Well, I was really excited when I watched SmackDown tonight. I have very few things that really, like you were talking about the Bengals earlier, and how like you're going to let out a primal scream. And I was thinking for me, there's like just not that many things in this world of ours, this tiny and yet so big world of ours that could still get me to achieve that level of joy. But tonight on SmackDown, one of those few things started to come into the horizon, and Hawkins, there are a few moments in wrestling you know that I've wanted for a long time. Obviously, the gun match, where there is one gun and the competitors have to fight over it. The winner is the one who uses the gun.
Firearms enthusiast, Chris Novembrino.
No, I'm just a big fan of the gun match. I think it's the most pure form of competition. But the other thing that I've long wanted is a match where both competitors use a spear so that we could arrive at the point where both rev up to spear each other. And tonight when Bill Goldberg, his music came on, I was like, yes, 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 one step closer. As he inched closer to Roman Reigns, I was like, spear, spear, spear. Hawkins, we're going to get it. Two men spearing each other in the middle of the ring in the Kingdom of Blood, Saudi Arabia.
Didn't we have that? Didn't we have something? Because Edge uses a spear too.
Edge, Goldberg, and Roman Reigns do like crisscross crash convergence.
We could add
Bobby Lashley.
And doesn't Drew McIntyre also do a spear or no?
No, he doesn't. Lashley Bobby does. Bobby does. Get four-way crisscross crash, baby.
Four spears.
They said it couldn't be done. They said it shouldn't be done.
And then the world ends. And then that's how the world ends. It's four four professional wrestlers doing the same move to each other at once. And then
I would mark out so
the heavens open. And
when you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm going to stay on SmackDown just for a quick note and then what I wanted to get into. My quick shout out. It's Madcap Moss. People doing his material, one of whom, friend of the show, but there are others. This is much like Adrian Chase in NXT. It's so bad, it's good, and it's grown on me. Madcap Moss's jokes are actually getting better, and I'm frightened by this, Chris, because they're actually funny. Like he's actually doing a good job of cheering people up doing this.
The Scott Free joke,
yes,
was actually funny.
Yes, these jokes are great, and it's frightening me, because I thought the gimmick was supposed to be he tells bad jokes and makes people laugh, but instead he's telling decent jokes and making people laugh, and it's kill. And number two, it's coming from the former Riddick Moss, who had a exercise gimmick in NXT. He was Tino Sabatelli's other half in NXT when you thought Tino was the star. I'm amazed. I like him better than Baron Corbin, even.
I know it's like not even close. I think Riddick Moss has a lot more personality than
Madcap Moss now. Yes,
Madcap Moss. I just think the guy has a lot more personality than Corbin. Corbin's. I get that he's a guy who's willing to do whatever the company asks him to do, and that's why like there is a certain niche of the audience that has strange respect for him or whatever.
Yeah,
but his promos aren't actually any good. In the ring, he does like three moves, and you could say he's working the WWE style. But like, if you're gonna say someone's a good wrestler, wouldn't you want to also be on terra firma that they know anything more than the standard five WWE moves? Like, I don't like. I, by any objective measure, I just don't see anything good, even really, about. No one gets hurt.
I think he does what he's told, and that's good. Yeah,
that's fine. That's fine is not good, though.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I think Moss is actually good. I think Corbin's at best fine.
Now to my point that I wanted to bring up, and that is one Ronda Rousey. Ronda's tete-a-tete with Becky was bad. The tete-a-tete with Charlotte, probably worse. Charlotte's the only person who can actually try and baby Ronda, and I don't think that's going to happen. But I realized what my problem was. She's not a very good actress, and I think we saw that when she tried to do movies, but at the same time, do this. Watch a six-year-old who's upset about not being allowed to get a toy, and then listen to Ronda Rousey cut a promo, because that's what it is to me. It's the same. Like, you don't think that's a... patter that she has is that of a child who is throwing a bit of a temper tantrum because she doesn't get what she wants. Not coming off as tough, although it was better tonight than it was against Becky, because in Becky, she's doing that while saying preposterous things like, I'm the thing, the axis on which this company revolves. And you're just, what? That's not... All we want to do is see you break women's arms. Okay, that's all. And they kind of got to there tonight, but at the same time, I'm just like, she's not an endearing personality that people can get behind. People get behind her because, oh, she was in UFC. And I think this might be the year, depending on how long she stays. Like, towards the end of the last run, people were turning on her during her promos. And because they were long-winded, they were full of gobbledygook, They were just bad. I think this crowd, this program, I said it before, has the potential to be like the Lesnar Goldberg program that got booed out of Mania. This might be that. It's a dangerous thing they're playing, and because they're not going to be going to Becky immediately, and I think people are going to want it.
Yeah, I think the Ronda babyface push, the reason it lost steam is that the reason it worked in the first place was all premised on new car smell.
Stephanie
was a good foil, but there was a lot of intrigue about wanting to see Ronda Rousey finally wrestle.
Yeah.
And people were very there and very excited. She stayed in UFC a little too long, but like not so long that she was stale by the time she hit WWE. But after we saw Ronda wrestle the first time, and then after we saw Ronda win the championship, and WWE not having a great long-form story for her to tell as the champion once she won the championship, where's the desire for the fan to see her get the belt again when they don't even necessarily... no one has a signature moment from her championship run that they're trying to get back to. And again, if you want to convince someone, we want to see this person be champion again, it's like, oh, you remember when Sting was holding the title above his head and how good that felt? Don't you want to see Sting win the belt again? Yeah, I remember that. I want that moment again. There is no moment that we want for Ronda Rousey to get back to. And so then I think the other issue is once the new car smell's gone, and once we've blown through the first title run, and also she doesn't have like great heels to really work against because Ronda needs to be overbooked in order to really be credible. Part of the problem too for Ronda was that there was no monster heels for her to really work at the time. So she has to work either Charlotte or Becky, and really like a Ronda character works better if Nia Jax could wrestle.
Or she gets in there and she ends up destroying Bayley and Sasha, which is how they built her up for these, you know, two good wrestlers who can carry her to a good match.
Right. And really what she needed is, you know, Awesome Kong not available. Yes. Nia Jax couldn't really do it, but like
Tamina couldn't do it.
Yeah, no, Ronda needed that essentially. Yes. She needed a bunch of Vaders to come in and be the person that, she, you know, like, how's Ronda going to get past this one? Needed to basically be our story of the month for 6 months. The absence of that, I think, made it not very exciting to see Ronda fight because you just assumed she was going to win. The Ronda matches, I don't think she's as bad as some people say, because I've seen her do good work.
I'm not saying she's a... I said she was a bad wrestler. That's probably a little bit strong. She's good in spots.
Yeah.
But it's not one of those things where for any length of time, she's telling a coherent story.
No. And the promos, they stink. They're real bad. They're real, real bad. And they've never been good. And I'm with you. Like, she's just so naturally a heel. She's so easy to dislike. And I actually think, in terms of booking her strongly and getting her back to presenting her as a world beater, having her be, like, this smug person who wins all the time and like doesn't really care about how they win and everything, I think would actually do a lot for her to get her swagger back, much more so than whatever she's doing right now. I actually think, like, against the Beckys and the Charlottes of the world, why not have the fans adore Becky, since they already want her to be babyface anyways, and have Ronda be the heel who's just like, I'm sick of your goofy sunglasses. I'm sick of you, Rebecca. You're a joke. You're not like, you're not big time. You're like not even a star, dude. Like, you couldn't get landed on a television show. And basically just run down WWE for the WWE fans and let the WWE fans get behind their Beckys, Charlottes, Baileys, and Sashas.
Yeah, have her be UFC Ronda.
Yeah.
Visiting the promotion. And that would give Vince enough things to run down about UFC because he doesn't like UFC. Your turn. Where do you want to go?
Man, where do I want to go? Okay, let's do MJF Punk. Where were you on this match?
I really liked this a lot. I loved the first third. The first third was pure NWA worldwide, straight out of 87, Dusty versus the Horseman style thing. Kick, punch, heel bouncing all around on the rope spot type of thing. Punk playing Dusty Rhodes. The 20 punches in the turnbuckle. The finish with the, I mean, that came after, but like the first finish with the tape around the net that dropped, and they restarted the match. The Dusty finish there, straight out of old school territory wrestling. I absolutely adored this. The last two thirds, I thought it got a little long winded there, but I liked it. I liked the match a lot, quite a bit. I know you have some reservations about MJF though.
Yeah. Okay. So I think I'm with you on the first third. The general structure of this match was fine. For me, the issue here is execution. And I'm not just talking about MJF trying to do the Bret Hart figure four around the turnbuckle and like falling and instead like humping a leg on CM Punk or anything like that. I'm talking about that MJF is kind of a two or three chord song at best. And for the first third of the match, the two or three chords that the guy plays, they work. Kick, punch, target a limb, be a jerk. That'll get you through 7 to 10 minutes as a heel, any era. Totally works. Beyond minutes 8 and 9, I need suplexes. I don't need you to be doing dives to the outside, but I do need...
They did minimal high spots, and I liked that, too.
And
meant something.
But I need the strikes to mean something.
Yes.
I need the suplexes to mean something. I need... MJF has sort of one, as I was saying, two or three chords when it comes to doing his heel work. It's he gets you on the ground, he works a limb, he gets into his rest holds, he goes back to kicky punchy, maybe does a dastardly thing, goes back to his rest holds. Some of this stuff is well within the contours of what we expect out of heel work. I'm not saying a heel shouldn't be doing limb work. Of course they should be. I always talk about this. But... in a 38-minute match, which is what this is, I need my heel to be doing a few devastating power moves. I need my heel to be doing some strikes where I'm like, oh, shit, damn.
Trying to hurt the guy.
Yeah, I needed to be like, oh, man, he really waylaid CM Punk a few times.
Yeah.
Like, I never felt that. I always I get that same comic
book. And especially
book-y.
For a match of this caliber where it's based on a hate feud. Yeah.
Yeah. That to me was what was missing. It was well structured, well worked. That part fine. The structure's great. I mean, the way that they seeded the Pepsi plunge into the match in a way that was earned and was not just merely fan service, although of course they're doing it as fan service in Chicago and everything. I thought all of that was fine, but yeah, after the Dusty finish, I thought the match went a little bit long in the tooth. And I hated the way that we used Wardlow at the end of this.
You didn't like that the past few weeks have been a red herring for the most part?
No, because then last week should have been a much harder sell.
Okay.
And if the past few weeks were a red herring, then if that was going to be a really successful red herring storyline, the crowd should have been frothing last week for Wardlow to save CM Punk, and they were not. The crowd didn't even bite on this, so I didn't think it was a successful thing. The only thing that I thought was smooth was the Wardlow hands off the ring to... Yeah, that part was dope.
That was great.
The problem is that no one was really ecstatic that Wardlow was going to turn. Right. And it also didn't necessarily make a lot of sense that Wardlow was going to turn in Chicago. The only way that would have made sense is if Wardlow had left Cleveland and, like, stormed off mad at MJF, livid at him, like, disgusted that he had been embarrassed in his hometown, that all this had happened in front of the people that he loves or whatever. And so there's this real question when Wardlow comes down. I didn't like that. It didn't work. Here's the problem for me and why I say it didn't work for me. I'm not interested in seeing Wardlow become a face now. That's the issue here. I'm not interested in the Wardlow face turn anymore. And he's arguably the most interesting member of Pinnacle. With MJF, get that he is clearly passionate about the business. I get that he is trying. He just doesn't tick enough boxes for me.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay on AEW Dynamite. And two segments that just have me baffled because I don't know if people know that the roles that they're supposed to be playing here. The first was that Chris Jericho promo. Now, Jericho at this point has become very WWE Jericho in that every time he comes out, he's trying to make a new t-shirt happen. And he was doing that again with another catchphrase, trying to get that to go. But also he's cutting this promo that's almost heel-like when he's been in the right this entire time in terms of what he did for Proud and Powerful. And it just, it's not making any sense. And it just, you're watching this and going, all right, is he supposed to be the babyface or the heel here? You don't know. You don't know why he's acting this way. When he did save Proud and Powerful with the Judas effect from the outside for the pin, it just, these things aren't clicking. They're not connecting well as a story.
Well, yeah, it's like stupid, right? Like, shouldn't Proud and Powerful have seen the replay by now and seen that, like, the reason they won the match is because Jericho hit the Judas? Like, it's, that's
the whole,
stupid.
The whole time only passes when you're at television. Drives me insane. It's like, you had a week to patch this stuff up. Show them the tape, you dope. And then come back to work the next week and everything's cool for the most part. You know, it's not, but no. Time only happens when the TV cameras are on. So in this world, it's one big continuity thing where it's just ridiculous. The other one.
And that's not even consistent with other continuity because it's like the Young Bucks and Adam Cole and Red Dragon, they were able to see the replay of their match a few weeks ago.
Yes. Yeah. Only certain people have access to video for some reason. The other one was this Brandi Rhodes Dan Lambert segment where I'm watching this and I'm going, what is the end game here? I understand that the only way to really Lambert is coming out and saying some very good lines. Don't get me wrong. I like them, but Brandi, who I think Cody is still trying to be the babyface, I don't know, comes out, heels on the crowd immediately with the Cleveland Chicago bit, is healing on Lambert, who is getting cheered here. I hated the Josh Alexander line because nobody watching AEW really knows who Josh Alexander is unless they follow All Wrestling. Don't get me wrong. I like Josh Alexander a lot. I like Monster Mafia / The North a lot as a team. But Excalibur needed to explain who Josh Alexander was rather than leave that lingering.
I thought he was a sports guy.
I'm going to circle back actually to note on MJF Punk, by the way, as well, after I finish this. So look out for that. But yeah, no, this whole thing was just baffling to me. Like, what was the point of it in the end game? I just did not understand that. Maybe you can give me some clarity. I just want to add this one coda because it's a note I had for the MJF Punk match. The thing that upset me the most about this match is I wanted finally Schiavone, especially I wanted that announcing booth, but especially Tony Schiavone to channel their inner David Crockett and to be actually actively cheering CM Punk on against MJF. For weeks they've been calling him a prick and talking about how terrible a person MJF is. This is the time Lance Russell used to do it, Bob Caudle used to do it. All of your quote unquote straight objective wrestling announcers used to do it. They sometimes drop the objectivity to cheer on the babyface against the heel, and I wanted this throughout the match. I only got it sporadically, and instead they kind of laid off that, and I was a little bit upset by that.
Yeah, no, the direction should have definitely been given to Schiavone that, like, you need to be continuing to ramp up the intensity. It should start off with little snide comments about MJF at the beginning in the first 10 minutes of the match. And then then someone gets on the phone. All right, Tony, a little bit more. Final 10 minutes, Schiavone needs to be a naked partisan for CM Punk. And when Wardlow hands the ring off to MJF. Shivani should actually be screaming.
Shivani
about,
needing to be held back to fix this.
The JR should be trying to calm Tony down.
Yes.
Yeah, like that. No, he needs to be the vehicle. It's small stuff, but it's big stuff.
Yes.
It's small, and that does add up to viewership. As we always talk about ratings begin the show, but I will forever be thinking about that CM Punk needle spike in the ratings when the first week he came back. When people care and when people are really interested in what a real star is doing, they want to see it. And the little stuff, that matters. That gets people to decide whether or not they think an MJF and CM Punk feud is worth their time. And I don't know, for me, this is a nice match. If I had to give it a star rating, I don't know, 3.75 or something, you know how dogged I am on that.
Can you answer my other question? What's the end game on this Brandy Lambert thing?
Boy, baffled. Cause she comes out and she's healing hard. And then Lambert comes out and he's like doing two things. One, he's like reminding the crowd you should hate him. And then, two, he's just, like, having a fight with Brandy, and, like, no one likes Brandy, and no one really likes Cody, and everyone wants them to go heel so much so that Lambert's even bringing it up. And the weird thing, once, like, Lambert brings up, hey, you should go heel, it's basically a death zone for the other person. It's like...
breaking the fourth wall that I can't...
Yeah. No, it's like an improv thing where it's like, don't you see the... yellow octopus in the room now? Like now everyone has to work around the yellow octopus. We all want you to go heel. Either Brandy goes heel to the approbation of the crowd finally, or does not go heel and the scene stalls. And what Cody and Brandy have chosen repeatedly, inexplicably, is to do this, no, we're not going to go heel thing. Scene stalls, but they're like, no, we have a third way. The third way is here. And the third way is we're not going to go heel, and we're going to even tell you that we're not going to go heel. So not only are we going to stay like annoying Hulk Hogan in 1995 babyface, even though everyone's booing us, we're going to go, brother, I know you're booing me right now, but I still love you, Jack.
Reverse thing. It's like,
Cool. This Brandy Lambert thing, Paige Van Zandt's gonna get babyfaced during this match. No one's gonna boo Paige Van Zandt.
How do we have two people of moderate MMA skilledom, although Ronda being much more so on both shows now? How do we have this happening? This is just anyways, it's your turn.
Okay, it is my turn. Only good thing in NXT 2.0 GPA is the Creeds and Diamond Mine. At this
Imperium?
Point. You mean Gunter's faction with his with his new buddies Klaus and Fritz?
Now I want that. You see, you can't throw that joke out there.
After the promo, it would have been great if Walter goes, I am Gunter, and then Bartel's like, I am Fritz.
We the Katzenjammer kids. I still like Wendy Chu too, actually.
I will say this. The opening match, for what it was, I was like so here for this Imperium versus the Creeds thing. This is really good. Outside of that, there's nothing really on this show worth writing home about. Wendy Chu is fun, but like it wasn't like Wendy Chu versus Amari Miller was anything.
No. But she's fun, and I'll take fun rather than trying to tell me something's fun, you know?
Yeah, right. I'm with you. It's the same thing with like Andre Chase. Like, yeah, at least he's like legitimately fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. But that's NXT 2.0.
It's pretty much that. I'm gonna go to Raw and then I'll go to Rampage. So I have two left. I don't know how many you have left, but Otis and Chad Gable are turning chicken S into chicken salad. Especially Gable in this run. He's finally just learned to just, you know what? I'm not gonna fight for any athletic credibility. I'm just gonna be a goofball. And he's great at it. And Otis is, this is not the role Otis should be playing at all. Don't get me wrong. I loved dumb blue collar solid Otis. But they are making the most of this just stupid academic challenge angle. And I love the ridiculous tights and with the wetsuit or whatever the hell they were wearing here. You know, you have to give credit where credit is due. They're never going to try and improve this product. So if somebody's thriving or at least doing something with a bad idea, I give credit to it. The other thing I wanted to bring up to you, how are we feeling about this Becky Lynch Lita match in Saudi Arabia? Follow up question. Are they going to paint a thong on Lita's bodysuit when she has to dress up?
Yeah, I'm like fascinated as to, okay, like what's Lita's outfit there going to be like? I guess the other part though, beyond like that is, man, when Lita came out, she felt like a bigger deal than Ronda Rousey. Like Lita's return, I would never have blocked it to happen at the same time as Ronda Rousey's return. But having those two stacked up against each other, it felt like Lita was the bigger deal. I thought that was a real big mistake in the way that they did that.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I understand for the Saudi Arabia shows, we want to bring legends there because they were asking for legends before. You recall the first show for Crown Jewel. It was, they wanted Yokozuna and the Ultimate Warrior, both who had passed away many, many years ago. Lita's part of that Attitude Era thing. I guess the money was too good to pass up. I'm not going to judge her for that necessarily. I know some other people have online. It's a hell of a payday to go to Saudi Arabia for that for one night's worth of work and first class flight. I have you been clamoring for a Lita match?
No. And the issue's never the first class flight there. It's the return flight that seems to be the issue.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. But it's also one of those things where it's like the women's legends are the same legends they always bring back. They're not bringing anything new. Does Lita still have? I mean, look, I wasn't the biggest Lita fan when she was at her peak because I know she did great stunts, but she
right.
Wasn't...
Yeah, she wasn't a good promo. I never thought that she actually did great stories or anything. She was just always good.
She was popular.
And she was a super good worker. Good worker, understood how to do the spots part of it, but like there were other key character elements to her that were kind of missing for me.
See, you liked her work more than I did. That's probably the issue I'm having right now, because I thought it was like she had her five moves, and then that was about it for me personally. But yeah, I think that dynamic's gonna be interesting. The build here. We'll see what they do with it. I mean, I find Becky to be an atrocious heel. I do. I just she's too likable. If you watch,
she's too,
if you watch
she's
the
too
Stone
likable.
Cold stuff,
she doesn't know how to not be goofy in terms
yes,
of being a heel. She doesn't.
That's the other thing.
She never knows how to not be goofy. And the best,
like when
heels,
she was the man, she was goofy. When she's big time Bex, she's kind of goofy.
And like the
and she's
best
naturally
heels
goofy
in this company have been people like Ivory, have been people like Victoria, people who have, like, there's no humor to their stock. I mean, there might be, you know, one week or another, whatever, but like their stock character is a humorless, cold, no nonsense thing. And like that, I mean, we can say that that's a trope or whatever, maybe we need a more modern version of the heel. I grant all of that. I'm open to that discourse. In WWE's universe, though, they need heels that are of that cloth. And whenever
yes,
they get,
you need a serious heel rather than right, a...
Whenever you get to, like, goof heel, especially in the women's division, it never works.
Yeah, she's coming off to me like female Miz. in this aspect. But yeah, no, I get that feeling. Yeah, then and I don't want you to read about Raw. Please don't read about Raw.
No, dude, I was reading about Raw here. I was like, Jesus, I can't even make good jokes on this one. Like, it's. I mean, the only thing I will say is that Veer has been coming for so long that I think he needs to go and see a doctor.
It's like
it's supposed to stop after about four hours.
Yes, Peter North thinks that he's been coming for a long time. That's yeah, that was mine. Yeah, bring a towel because Veer's coming again. You know, all the jokes. He's come so much, he's now gone. I mean, that's
has he passed the Glacier threshold yet, though?
Passed Emelina and Glacier at this point.
Nice.
People who were coming for a long time and then stopped coming for some reason. I need to stop using that terminology. What's next for you, if you have anything?
What's next for me? I guess we can go to Rampage because that's the only thing that we really.
Yeah, that was about. What I was going to end with. I have two notes for that, but please go with yours.
Okay. I thought that bringing attention to Mercedes Martinez losing via disqualification was a very weird thing. Like, it was weird that commentary chose to hang on that note. Oh my God, there's never disqualifications in AEW. I don't know that that's a good thing. Like they were saying that as a value positive thing, but like, I think especially for those of us who like just watched the MJF CM Punk match, that's like maybe the last match that's like in your mind, in your head, that probably should have ended in a disqualification. MJF should have been disqualified. So yeah. It was weird for them to, I mean, it's like a small continuity error, but it's one that stuck out to me.
I will say this, because I was going to talk about the Mercedes thing too. I love the multifaceted aspect of that backstage promo afterwards with Tony. I watched that and I went, this is a fantastic story. She knocks Thunder Rosa out with the pipe. We thought when she appeared during the TBS tournament that it was Jade who hired her or Mark Sterling, but it turns out that it was Britt Baker who hired Mercedes Martinez because she doesn't trust the two heavies who are in her employ already to get the job done already, which is sowing doubt between them.
But specifically it's Hater. That Baker's and Rebel is still I love Britt.
Funky. Funky.
But it's Hater who the rift is now being.
But now you have a plethora of stories if you want them amongst the bad guys, so to speak, well, Thunder Rosa can be Clint Eastwood. And if you wanted to, but you have Jade, maybe not trusting Mercedes. You have Mercedes and Hater. You have Mercedes and DMD. You have Mercedes and Rebel. You have Jade and DMD. Because of what Mark Sterling did in terms of the check and stuff like that. I think this is the kind of storytelling I want for heels sometimes. And I kind of dig this quite a bit. I mean, I think what might happen is Hater ends up signing with Rosa in order to take on the others, which is fine. You have that as an option. You also have the option that eventually all the other baddies just turn on Mercedes here. And then not a coexist angle, but at least okay, Mercedes is going to help get revenge on the people who punked her, but she doesn't like Rosa still. I mean, you have lots of ways you can go with this, and they all interest me, quite frankly, because I really like Mercedes Martinez a lot and a lot of the other players here.
Yeah, I mean, look, all the major players I think very highly of. Thunder Rosa, Britt Baker, Mercedes Martinez, and I think that you have enough strong players here to support Jamie Hayter, who maybe needs a little bit of work, but I think can be carried to a good match. Jade Cargill now making jokes about how green she is in the ring. Jade, you're like actually stinky. Like, you're stinky bad. I mean, you look like $1 million, but like your wrestling skills, I wouldn't pay $1.50 for him.
My other note was just, I loved the end of that Lethal Starks match. That was smooth.
Boy, wasn't it? I had that note too. Jay Lethal, especially considering it's like a Rampage match and everything, like absolutely over-delivered for the slot. That like finish, him and Starks, just really great chemistry, really nice match, just really enjoyable. That That and the, I know I'm down on NXT 2.0 GPA, but like the Creed and Imperium match, this is a classic for what it was award, but for what it was, that was exactly what it needed to be. Same thing with this Rampage match. This is not going to change your life. It's not meant to be like a Meltzer scale 5-star match or anything like that. Good. Nice finish. Jay Lethal did a real nice job here. Dante Martin's spot was good.
Yep.
I liked the jumping to the outside and there's no water in the pool spot. I thought that that was a great spot. That was really
good. He
just
stands and stares at him. That was so great. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. I'll end with one other thing. I did watch some classic wrestling this week from my youth and it just did not hold up. I watched the 1988 Bunkhouse Stampede Finals. I'm going to talk to Joel Pearl on it, about it over on Fightful Overbooked. There's a Bobby Eaton versus Nikita Koloff singles match. There's a Flair versus Hawk match. And there's a Larry Zbysko versus Barry Windham for the Western States Heritage title match. And all of them are snoozers. And it's so unfortunate. And then they have the Bunkhouse Stampede Finals, which it sounds good at the time. We're going to have a Bunkhouse Stampede and we're going to put it in a cage. And the way to get them out, get people out of the match is to throw them through the door or over the top of the cage. And you're like, if you're 15, that sounds like a great idea. You watch it in practice. It's like, this has no logic to it whatsoever. It was terrible. It was the show that they put on. They were putting on pay-per-view and the first Royal Rumble was counter programming for it on USA as a free show on USA. So for historical context, talking about the Royal Rumble, I'm going to go on there and talk about this show. It was dreadful. Avoid it. Go watch a Bunkhouse Stampede. That's real. That you know, if you can find it like on a TV, like there's a worldwide with one on it. But don't watch this one. This thing was dreadful. And I will end the lazy river of wrestling criticism there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at Crap Game 13. You can follow Chris at DWATG. You can just follow the show at Shake Them Ropes. All one word. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Please listen to all our podcasts. The Flagship with Joe and Rich. There's no feud there with Rams fans at all.
The Rams fans would need to be able to listen to a podcast that's 60 minutes and their attention span only goes about 10 seconds. Also, I use pretty big words on a regular basis. Rams fans, they like the small words. They like six letters. Like Wordle, Wordle's the best thing that's ever happened for Rams fans because their vocabulary only goes up to 5 and they can now count all the words on their fingers.
The thoughts of Chris Novembrino do not reflect the thoughts of this show, but he has a show where he can express his opinions. It's called Don't Worry About the Government. He's gonna
and this one
now.
Yeah, this one's my forum. Rams fans, you guys suck. So real quickly here, Rams fans, you don't have to listen to this. It's gonna go right over your head. But real quickly here, I just want to say, Hawkins, over the last week, I have read a number of stupid comments when it comes to cold weather. Many of them probably written by Rams fans, morons. But I just want to say this to all of you. If you don't live in Texas and you want to make your little stinky dink jokes about, 2 inches of snow in Texas shuts down the whole state. Yeah, no, I get it. A lot of my fellow state people don't know how to drive or they're idiots and they think their truck, because they saw like a Montero commercial back in 92, is like going to handle the cold weather. And that
like a rock.
Yeah. They put on a Bob Seger mixtape and they think that they can drive in the ice. No, I get that that's a problem. They're dopes. But you also have to remember, you Rams fan acting people, that the infrastructure in the state is not weatherized for the cold weather. So the pipes, the electrical like cables and stuff, lots of different things could fail. So don't be a jerk. Don't be like a stupid fan of the Rams are in Los Angeles, right? Do Rams fans even know? They just go down to a warehouse and they think they're watching a football game every Sunday. It's great. It's a wonderful thing for a Rams fan. Point being, don't make light of people who have been going through these freezes. When they happen out here in Texas, we do legitimately get scared. As for Don't Worry About the Government, you can find that at don'tworry.tv, at patreon.com/DWATG, on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify. I also did an appearance on Matt Lewis's show, Matt Lewis in the News. I taped that like literally earlier today. I think that will be out Monday or something. I'm talking about Ukraine and foreign policy riffs. The new Don't Worry About the Government's on Ukraine too. May have one more pass on it, and then I'll move on to some new topic here next week.
Ukraine, I crane. We that, crane.
That was actually the name of the episode, Hawkins. Oh,
was it?
Yeah, yeah. We all crane.
Damn it. See you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.